Hello, welcome to Train of Thought. My name's Rob Tobias. My guest today is Jeff Cohen, who's in town. He's an executive producer of the film, one of the producers on the film, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, which is playing tonight. And he's doing a little tour, I guess, in support of that film. Jeff, welcome.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. Lots we can talk about. I was just kind of doing a little research on you. You're a media, independent media advocate, filmmaker. You've got a lot going in sort of being a watchdog on the media landscape. And you have, a few organizations. I don't know. With Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting is one of the ones I
founded.
Saw.
I founded that in 1986. Uh-huh. At this point, I'm just an advisor, unofficial.
I see.
The group I'm most active in is the online activism group, rootsaction.org.
I see.
I co-founded that with Norman Solomon.
Great. I see. I went there and I said there's a lot of petitions and sort of action alerts and things like that online, rootsaction.org. You've taught a little bit on Ithaca College?
Yeah, for 10 years I taught as an associate professor of journalism at Ithaca, and my specialty was independent non-corporate media, which has boomed in the last 15, 20 years thanks to the internet.
Here we are. Yeah. I'm independent non-corporate on KEPW, which is local here in Eugene, but also I'm posting on SoundCloud and trying to get this podcast out to whatever ears can find me.
There's the glut of podcasts. How one rises above the crowd, I don't know.
I don't know either, but a few people will hear this and find out a little bit more about Jeff Cohen and the film. Yeah. Why don't we start with the film that you're kind of touring with? Coup d'etat, that's about overthrowing existing governments, right?
But it's not being done by, revolutionaries. We are talking about the corporate coup d'etat.
Right.
And it's the hijacking of U.S. democracy over the last 40 years by big corporations.
Yeah.
I believe the corporate elite has control of 99% of the Republican Party and half of the Democratic Party.
Mm.
It's the reason that there's so much wealth and income inequality. It's the reason there's so much environmental degradation, that when you allow an alleged democracy, when you allow the takeover of the institutions of government by this tiny elite that only cares about increasing its profits for the next quarter, and by definition, corporations can't think about, boy, let's save the environment in 10 years or 5 years. That's just not what corporations are set up to do.
Hmm.
So it's really a dangerous situation that corporate greed largely determines what the government's policies and rules are.
Now, most coups you think about, kind of military or something that happens in a short period of time, but this is you called it a slow motion coup.
Right.
How'd they do it?
Yeah, well, that's why you need to see the movie. No, it was inspired by a comment in 1995 by a leading public intellectual in Canada, John Ralston Saul. He said, "We're in the middle of a corporate coup d'etat in slow motion." Mm-hmm. And what we show in the movie that, in a matter of a few decades, we went from a governing structure that occasionally cared about what working class and middle class people needed and wanted and expressed, to a point where, there's this famous, it's Gillens and Page, this famous study by the academics, one of them was at Princeton at the time, it's sometimes called the Princeton Study, where they looked for years, they looked at all of the things that came out of Washington and how what passed was always what the top 1% wanted. But if you looked at polls and things that the bottom 50, 60, 70% overwhelmingly wanted, in a democracy, the majority is supposed to sometimes get what it wants. And the Gillens study showed the majority of people, working class people, middle class people, don't. But if a few powerful corporate interests want something done. They don't always win, but they often win. And so, I mean, how did it happen? We talk about the Powell memo, which was written by Lewis Powell in the early 70s. They were freaked out in the corporate boardrooms. Mm-hmm. He was a lawyer for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And they were really freaked out by the new left and all these movements in the 60s demanding equality for women and gays and ending war and and ending racism. And there was a real fear in the corporate elite. So Lewis Powell writes a memo for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He later became a Supreme Court justice appointed by Nixon. Uh-huh. If the memo had surfaced, he would never have gotten on the Supreme Court. But it basically talked about how we need to fund academics. It was like the whole nine yards. We'd have to fund media, right-wing media, saving the free enterprise system from people like Ralph Nader. And then then Reagan takes over years later.
I always thought the overturning of the Fairness Doctrine was a major event.
Yeah, and everything else he did. I mean, basically gutting antitrust law. You know, antitrust law is not like some socialist or communist thing. The original antitrust bill was the Sherman bill. He was a Republican. The original so-called quote-unquote trust buster was Teddy Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. He was a Republican. And beginning in the 80s and continuing whether a Democrat was in power or not, corporations merged and merged and merged. A few companies took over every industry. And both parties were effectively bought off by this corporate elite. Mm-hmm. And even during the 8 years of Clinton and the 8 years of Obama, there was almost no antitrust enforcement. Mm-hmm. The other thing that happened during this 40-year coup or corporate takeover is the export of jobs, the outsourcing. There are no rules. Here you had all these taxpayers that have paid for roads to go to the factory gates, railroad track to take the take the goods out of the factory. Whole zones of our country have become sacrifice zones. They were used by corporations, subsidized by the taxpayer, and the minute they could find cheaper labor or slave labor overseas, they moved.
Isn't that globalism? I mean, in some ways, the left honors globalism and say, yeah, well, jobs should be spread out over the globe a little bit.
Well, the left calls itself internationalist and fights for rights of poor and working people across the globe. But what the process we describe in the movie, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, is what we call corporate globalization, where it was a drive to the bottom. You can't ask workers in Illinois or Ohio or Michigan that are getting paid $30-$40 an hour to compete with countries where they're getting, you know, $5 a day. It was a corporate drive to the bottom, abandoning the United States, looking for cheap labor.
Right.
And it has its consequences. In the movie, we focus on Camden, New Jersey, sacrifice zone right outside of Philadelphia.
Why that name? Where does it? You know, branding is big. What is
Camden?
That? Sacrifice zone. What is why do you call it sacrifice zone?
I don't know exactly who started it. Uh-huh. I know Chris Hedges is a journalist, and he's featured in our movie. Mm-hmm. He might have been the one who sort of made it. It's these zones that corporations went into, got taxpayer subsidies, exploited for a generation or two or three, and then abandoned. And you look at them now, and these are regions across our country. We focused on Camden, New Jersey, largely a black city, and Youngstown, Ohio, which was the thriving steel belt with all these union steel jobs. And they're now sacrifice zones where there's so much drugs, there's prostitution, there's no jobs, there's people shooting each other.
Yeah.
There's total despair. In Camden, New Jersey, they voted mostly for Hillary against Trump in 2016. In Youngstown, Ohio, a number of the white working class voters who had, and this is one of the most interesting things about the movie, there's these voters we talked to who'd been union guys. They supported Obama twice. They voted for Obama twice. Mm-hmm. They voted for Bernie, some of them, in the primary over Hillary. And then they jumped and voted for Trump. And we interviewed one after another. And you know what? The one thing that the movie reveals is you can't beat a phony populist like Trump with a wishy-washy corporate centrist like Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden. The one word that everyone talked about that we interviewed was NAFTA.
Yeah,
they blame the Democrats, and you know, as President Clinton, Hillary's husband, who pushed through NAFTA largely with Republican votes, not Democratic votes. And they blamed Hillary for it, and Trump, I'm against, that was the stupidest trade deal ever, and I'm going to bring back your jobs. And as we, you know, we can't say this on the air, but one of the people we interview in the movie is the Democratic leader of Youngstown, and he warned the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary campaign, you're dying here.
Yeah.
And he said, when people are thirsty, they're going to drink dirty water.
Mm. Yeah. Do you, is your opinion that Bernie could have won that election?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. I mean, I grew up in Michigan, and you could do the same calculation in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, and those were the three states. But in Michigan, 10,000 votes separated Trump. That's what Trump beat Hillary by, and there were the best estimate is at least 40,000 people who voted for Bernie in the Democratic primary, then flipped and voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. So when you have those kinds of numbers, I mean, no one knows what would have happened between July and November of 2016, but the Republicans were very much in disarray. There was all this youth energy around Bernie. He was huge in Michigan and Wisconsin. It's hard to see how he could have lost those two states, and I think Bernie would have beaten Trump in Pennsylvania as well.
So now we got another election on the horizon. Seems like it's Warren and Biden are kind of the front runners right now. But
I don't see Biden. I think Biden's fading. I'd say Warren's the favorite. I used to be a cable news pundit where you're supposed to make these predictions.
And yeah.
I always felt we were wasting time. But Biden is fading. What's interesting, I've often heard from progressives how sad it is that Bernie and Warren are dividing up the progressive vote. And, you know, my response is, well, look at the seven corporate Democrats that are dividing up that vote. You know, if anything, Bernie and Warren have been advantaged by the fact that Klobuchar, Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, Biden, they all fundraise by having these high dollar events with CEOs and bundlers and lobbyists and what have you. And Bernie and Warren are running a campaign where they won't do a high dollar event. It's all small donations, almost all.
Right. It's a different way to run a campaign.
And that's why they're seen as so authentic and why they're both doing well. Bernie, in spite of the heart attack, is really doing great. He's got a hardcore base that respects him for his consistency over the years. I mean, I think that Warren's the front runner at this point.
I don't know how you judge, really. I mean, they put these national polls out, but to me, polls are meaningless.
Yeah, it's a waste of time.
The state polls interest me more. Like, I mean, Iowa, how? Because that's obviously, and New Hampshire, those are crucial first states. What do those polls look like? Because national polls, especially with Electoral College, they mean very little.
Right, they're utterly meaningless. I mean, people said, how did the pollsters get the election so wrong in 2016? Well, they didn't really. The national polls, they said Hillary was going to win, and she did.
Mm-hmm.
You can only look at state polls. Some of those were right, some of those were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of Iowa and New Hampshire, Warren's doing great in both states. Bernie's doing strong in both states. Biden was ahead, and he's fading in both states. The only surprise is Mayor Pete Buttigieg from South Bend, who's running on the same exact line as Biden. And Buttigieg has gotten this influx of corporate money because, you know, the corporations are freaking out. If you read the New York Times or the Washington Post, and their best connection is to Wall Street or corporate Democrats. That's who they speak for. And so you can find article after article where the corporate Democrats, the Wall Street Democrats, are freaked out that Warren or Bernie is going to win the nomination. And so, you know, they thought Biden was their guy. He's obviously not strong. He's not a good debater. He's not informed. And so now they're pushing a mayor of South Bend. I just can't conceive of the mayor of South Bend beating Warren or Bernie.
I do worry, though, with a Warren that, like you say, if corporations are in charge of this whole thing, yeah, and they're scared of her, right, what's to keep them from, yeah, marginalizing her and handing another the White House back to Trump? Yeah. That scares me.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the beauty of an election. I mean, you say corporations are scared of, corporations are scared of elections. Uh-huh. You know, they're worried about the idea that there are these episodic elections. If there were no elections, they would control everything. But they worry about the voters. And in this case, if Warren or Bernie got the nomination, no matter what the corporate media said about them, they're so far left, their proposals are so extreme and so radical. Once you get the nomination, you have a huge bully pulpit. And the more the corporate media attacks you, especially Bernie's very good at this, mm-hmm, and Warren is learning how to do this, you say, well, of course they're attacking me. They're some of the corporations I'm going to break up. They're the corporations I'm going to tax. These are the exact elitists who want to keep me from the White House because they want to keep Trump, who's so good for the 1% at the top and so bad for the rest of us. Any good candidate who gets the nomination, who's progressive, can turn the corporate media bias against the corporate media. And Bernie's been great at this for years.
Well, let me ask you, because I guess you have done a little time on some of these cable network shows. You were part of Crossfire, I see, years ago.
Yeah.
And Phil Donahue's show, that's not exactly the cable news. But
the show I worked on was for 6 months. Phil Donahue was on MSNBC primetime.
Oh, well, he had a show on it.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
And they killed it. They took it off the air 3 weeks before the invasion of Iraq because we were questioning the wisdom of the impending invasion. For doing real journalism, we were taken off the air. Almost all of cable news was cheerleading for the impending invasion. We were the squeaky wheel, and they just took the wheel and discarded.
As someone who's appeared, yeah, or produced shows, and I guess you've appeared as commentary.
Yeah.
How do the cable news networks control the narrative? I mean, who's deciding what's news every day in that realm?
Management and the owners. I mean, who owns? When I was there, MSNBC was owned by General Electric.
Yeah.
They make a huge profit from war. They make profit from rebuilding countries after war. Now, MSNBC is owned by Comcast. CNN is owned by AT&T.
Mm.
Those are two corporations that are trying to end the open internet. They're working hand in glove with President Trump's Federal Communications Commission to end net neutrality, which would allow internet service providers like them,
mm-hmm,
AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, those are the three that control most, that they'll be able to take websites, independent media websites, that they do not like or that do not pay them or that criticize them and push them into a slow lane. And Trump's been pushing for that, and he's working with the bosses of Rachel Maddow, Anderson Cooper, Chris Hayes. So, I mean, I don't see those things, those channels, and I wrote a book on this called Cable News Confidential. I don't see those channels as news channels, really. I call them reality-based entertainment shows. They're reality-based entertainment channels.
I saw a Frank Zappa quote recently that saying, I think politics is the entertainment arm of the military-industrial complex.
That's great. Zappa's great. But yeah, when you're there, I mean, think about it. The last 2.5 years, CNN and MSNBC discussed largely a hoax that there was this big conspiracy of Trump's people colluding with the Russians. And month after month, we were told how Mueller must know more than we know. And where there's smoke, there must be fire. You know, you heard this hour after hour. They're whipping up the public. All these liberals believe these channels, but it's not news. If you want news, you go to Democracy Now!, you go to Common Dreams, you go to Truth Dig or Truth Out. That's not news to cover the same story every hour of every day.
And yet that's where people are looking. I mean, yes. Fox News continues to be the top rated.
Yeah. And second, MSNBC has been growing too. But in my view, it's like two sides of the same coin. They're both corporate owned. They both discuss irrelevant issues. We, in our 90-minute movie, Corporate Coup d'Etat, we talk about the big issues of inequality, corporate power, what's wrong with our democracy, voter suppression. We have all these issues. You don't hear that on these channels that, and when I say they're soap operas, you know, they're reality-based, they get you hooked on a story where you know the characters. Our hero is Schiff. Our hero used to be Mueller, and we know who the villains are. It's Trump, and you exaggerate what the evidence is. It turned out Mueller didn't have anything more than Rachel Maddow did, and it was a huge disappointment for millions of people that followed her. But it's not news. I mean, imagine if they spent even one-tenth of the time they spent on Russiagate. Imagine if they spent it on the most important freedom of the press issue, which is saving the internet from Comcast, Verizon. You know, if one, they would lose their jobs because they would be directly contradicting the lobbying efforts of their owner. But also it would be a real issue that people could take action on. I mean, that's the beauty of cable news and news in our corporate society.
So I'll tell you, some hope I have in democracy that even in the last 10, I don't know how many years, you know, we've seen, gay marriage come through. We've seen marijuana legalization. There have been some pushes that have come from the people that have gained. And, you know, there's been all this climate activism, although Greta Turnbull, you know, sort of gets pushed to the side when the Ukraine thing comes forward. You know, that's no longer the story.
Right.
How do we keep it the story, like climate change or the internet? How do you make them cover it?
They'll never cover it. You got to get people to turn off CNN, MSNBC, and start paying attention to real news.
Yeah.
You know, you got to explain to people that's soap opera. News covers all the issues you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when's the last time you saw, I mean, I remember people confronted Chris Hayes, who's the most progressive voice on cable news. And he said, oh, we get lousy ratings, you know, with climate. You know, if you're a journalist, you cover the big stories that matter to the most people, and where you have villains and you can expose and people can take action. Real journalism leads to democracy. Real journalism, you lay out what the facts are, what's the crisis, here's what some people say are the solutions, and people who hear that can take action. What's the action that people could have taken over the last 2.5 years? What are they going to do? Send Mueller a thank you note, or send, you know, there's no action because it's irrelevant. But all of these other stories, and I believe the job of corporate-owned media is to keep people on the sidelines watching a spectacle. They don't want you to take the field. Mm. And if you know, like if people rang the bell, like this is a classic example of the point I'm making. If media covers the big issues in a dramatic way, millions of people will immediately take action. The greatest example of this is when John Oliver on HBO did a rant about how important it is to save net neutrality, to save the internet. He named the villains. He went on. It was funny as hell. Within no time, millions of people had seen it online because most people can't afford HBO. And it led to the FCC's computers melting down. They couldn't handle all of the comments. He said, get off your ass and make comments, and here's who you comment to. So when I look at that, and then I look at what they do on MSNBC and CNN or Fox, which is to keep us angry, hating each other, but not hating the people or being angry at those who really have power, and it's all spectacle. And that's why, I mean, there are these huge issues. Climate change is the biggest issue there is, and they don't cover it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Would you put NPR in that same category?
Yeah, not quite as bad, but bad. I mean, in other countries, public radio, public TV has independent funding, insulated funding. The politicians cannot turn it on or turn it off. If you wonder why NPR and PBS are always making sure there's a right winger, you know, and they used to have a lot of climate change deniers on the, is that they're afraid that the right-wing Republicans will end public broadcasting. In other countries, you don't worry about a congressional appropriation every year, every 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, NPR is very corporate. I mean, I've been in New York for years, and there was a fight, a real democracy fight, where the overwhelming majority of people, and especially activists, were trying to stop fracking. And people would listen to NPR, and they'd hear ads for frackers. They'd hear that. So, you know, I mean, people are losing faith, and I'm glad in even public broadcasting accepts this corporate money, and they are worried about right-wing Republicans turning off the funds. So you have to go to community radio stations like the one that you're on. Mm-hmm. And again, independent non-corporate media have been booming in the last 15, 20 years. If the internet is stopped, and that's what Rachel Maddow's boss and Anderson Cooper's boss wants to do. If the open internet is ended, this boom will become a bust. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at these events I've been speaking at around Oregon, people are passing out a list of independent news sources that you, and I was in a room full of liberals and progressives. Many of them had never heard of these.
Right.
You know, on that list that was passed around, it was Democracy Now!, CommonDreams.org, TruthDig.com, TruthOut.org, TheIntercept.com, TheNation.com. These places are really doing journalism on the biggest issues facing the globe.
And we'll put rootsaction.org in there too as a place. That's
right. It's a place you can learn what the issues are, but also take action. I mean, Norman Solomon and I formed this independent progressive, and sometimes we call the Democrats out. We're nonpartisan in that way.
I've been speaking with Jeff Cohen. He's an executive producer of the Corporate Coup d'Etat. It's a film that's playing in Eugene tonight, but where else will it be playing?
Tomorrow night, we will be in Florence at the library at 6:30 in the middle of Florence. The next night, I'll be in Astoria at a theater at 7 o'clock. If people want information about where and the addresses, you go to my website, which is one word, Jeff Cohen, JeffCohen.org, JeffCohen.org. I have the whole tour on the top of my website.
And will it get distributed? Will it play anywhere where you're not?
Yeah, that's the problem. This is a sequel. A lot of people in your audience might have already seen our previous movie, which was called All Governments Lie.
I see. Also directed by Fred Peabody.
Yes, Fred Peabody. It's the same team. Mm-hmm. I was a producer of that. All Governments Lie, Truth, Deception, The Spirit of I.F. Stone. It was a celebration of independent media and a critique of corporate media. And the interesting thing is that movie and the current movie, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, have been shown on public TV across the globe. Yeah. But it can't be, and there are movies about the United States, and they can't be shown on public TV here. That should tell us something.
Yeah, it does. Part of my research, I'd watched a little cable, and it was all insurance companies and pharmaceuticals, cars, fast food. So, there's the barking sign that means we're almost out of time. But Jeff, thank you, and best wishes. I hope a lot of people get to see this because we're in some deep doo doo, as they say, with our electoral process.
Well, keep giving voice to independent people. You're doing your little part. Sure,
I am. So, thanks again. You've been listening to Train of Thought. My name's Rob Tobias. That was Jeff Cohen talking about the Corporate Coup d'Etat. It's a film showing in Eugene tonight, but he'll be traveling around the country and sharing it with people. Thanks again for tuning in to Train of Thought. It airs on KEPW Radio 97.3 in Eugene, Mondays at 6 and Saturdays at 3:30. And I also post it on the internet at soundcloud.com/RobTobias. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you down the line. Train of Thought is produced at Maximo Productions in Eugene. If you have comments or feedback or ideas for interviews, email me at rob@robtobias.com.